Qualify briefly. At this time, the chairperson should briefly qualify. Requirements for chairing a meeting at the Central Orlando Group Saturday night speaker meeting are 1 year of continuous sobriety and attendance at a group conscious meeting. I'm Brian. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Brian.
Sobriety date is April 23rd, 1989, and that's your God's grace. And you know what? I love Alcoholics Anonymous. It's given me a life that I would have never dreamt of. Because before, all I did was think about me. Me, 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 me. I still think about me, but I have a solution today. You know, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. And I remember, too, my dad used to, you know, I'd always whine to my dad. And I'd say, Dad, I'm trying, I'm trying. And my dad said, don't try, just do it. And to me, that's Alcoholics Anonymous, is the action. If you want what we have and are willing to go to any lengths to get it. And for me, you know, I did some pissing and moaning through them steps, but I did them. And what happened is I had a spiritual awakening. And my favorite part in the big book now is our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be a maximum service to God and the people about us. And I get great joy out of working with the new men in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, normal drinkers don't say, hey, I have nothing better to do. I'll go to an AA meeting. They just don't think that. You know, if you're here, you're here for a reason. And if you're new, do the work. Do the work. And, you know, if I was, you know, I was so smart, how come I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous? How come I ended up in jail and trouble and all that? So, you know, today I am not that smart. And, you know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous and I love all the people here. You know, and this is a great way to live if you're willing to live it. And that's enough out of me. And the group has asked me to remind you to please make sure your cell phones are off and to refrain from moving around or talking while a speaker is sharing. You know, my speaker this evening, about 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, there was this guy out on the picnic table shaking away, you know, and he needed help. And what the great thing was is he was willing to do the work. And he's here. I see this man here, 6 o'clock meetings, all the time, working with new guys. And whatever's asked of him, he does. Plain and simple, he just does it. You never hear him complain. And you know what? He's happy. He laughs, jokes around. You know, that's what I love about Alcoholics Anonymous is the laughter. And he's always there. And he's always outside to help somebody new. And without further ado, probably not real happy I asked him, but please give a warm welcome to Al.
My name's Al. I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 27th of 2006. That's by God's grace. And working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous is outlined in the big book. I know somebody else that says that quite a bit. Brian asked me to speak a couple of months ago. My sponsor happened to be standing directly behind him. Both of them had this look. I don't know if you've seen the cartoon where Sylvester's got Tweety Bird hanging out of his mouth with the feathers, and both of them had that look on their face, and I'm trying to think of what to tell them, and the only thing I can think of is frothy emotional appeals seldom suffice. I am an alcoholic. I was born in Key West, Florida. My father was a career man in the Navy. My mother was a housewife most of her life. I've got an older sister who's 7 years older than I am. I have a brother who is 14 months older than me, and I have a sister that's 7 years younger than me. He was in the Navy, we did do quite a bit of traveling. For about the first 15, 16 years of my life, it was an adventure. as I say, I was born in Key West. He got transferred to Sanford, Florida. They had a air base there at the time. We stayed there briefly and then went to Naples, Italy for a couple of years. That was a real adventure for me. I was at the age where I could remember a lot. Had a couple of Italian buddies that lived downstairs, and at the time I could speak fluent Italian. I know comprende now. I remember we lived outside of Naples, a village outside of Naples, and all the bedrooms, all the main rooms and the houses around there, they had these big, you might want to call them terraces. They were terraces, not balconies. But you could walk out any one of them and look up, and there was Mount Vesuvius up there. Sometimes she was calm. Sometimes she was a little bit angry, But when it got active, you could smell the sulfur in the air. It smelled like a big fart. But it was truly probably the most fun of my life, because I didn't know anything but let's have fun. I remember down this woman owned the place, and they had a big garden. And every place down there, it is, as everyone should know, it's very Catholic over there. And she had a shrine in the garden. And me and my brother out there messing around one day. Next thing I know, my brother's up there dancing on top of the shrine. Some of the townspeople walking by saw it, and next thing we knew, the priest is at the house wanting to come in, wanting to bless my brother, bless the house, and my mother's freaking out, get out of here, But my brother sort of blazed the trail for me when I was growing up. From Italy, we moved to Patuxent River, Maryland, stayed there briefly. Then we moved to Brunswick, Georgia. And Brunswick was another one of those. They had a lot of paper mills, pulp mills. And there was that fart smell again, I think in Brunswick was a big growing point in my life. Thank God the city up there had a good organized sports program. So my parents made sure we got into some sports, and we were on the swim team. We played baseball and football. My brother, he's bigger than I am. He's got blonde hair. He tans. I'm redheaded. I've got freckles. I burn. He could hit a ball further than me. He was a natural. Anything he did, he was just a natural at it. Ending up, about the only thing I could do better than him was out drinking and out running, because we did fight quite a bit. And that was my survival, was run from him anyway. Eventually, you had to go home, so you're going to get it one way or the other. But from Brunswick, we moved. My father retired out of the Navy when he was up in Brunswick. He was due to come out of the Navy. That's when the Cuban Missile Crisis occurred. They kept him in 2 years longer, and he wasn't a happy man. But at any rate, we moved. He retired up there, and we stayed up there probably 2 or 3 years before we moved back to Sanford. When we were originally in Sanford, he had bought a house. When he left, he rented it out, and when we moved back into the house. And Boy, when we got back, that thing was a wreck. But so moving around that much, you would think you would get used to the change, meeting new people. But, you know, it seemed like the further south we got, the school system was a little bit further back. And the damn people in, most of the people in Sanford, my first impression was quite, they were quite unfriendly, you know. But went out for the football team when I got there, and walking home one day, and these two guys come flying by on a Vespa motor scooter, and they throw the water balloon at me. And well, the water balloon hit me. It didn't break. It bounced on the ground. It didn't break. I picked it up and threw it back, hit them. It broke. Little did I know, I just hit the badass of the school, you know, the guy that whips everybody's butt, you know. So here we square off in the dang sidewalk, and we ended up being best friends before it was over. But alcohol hadn't even entered my mind. Got into high school, stayed in sports. My senior year, a few of my buddies, they'd go out and get drunk, and I had a girlfriend. I was involved with sports. It just wasn't on my mind. Towards the end of my senior year, after sports was all over, we got together one night and we're going to get drunk. Well, I don't know what a social drinker is, you know, but anyway, we go out. There's three of us. We split a six-pack of Colt 45 malt liquor. God, man. Drank two of those, got drunk, got sick. But somewhere in between, I liked that buzz I got out of it. But still wouldn't. That was it, about the only time that I really got drunk in high school. I was lucky enough. I got a partial scholarship to East Carolina University to run track. And a good buddy of mine went up with me. And, you know, we're going, all right, we're going to North Carolina, drinking age is 18. You know, we'll get up there. And so we got up there. Then we realized they have an indoor and an outdoor track season up there. This is after we had signed the papers. We had no idea. So what that really means is you're in training year-round, you know. And a guy up there weighing 175 pounds, and he's going, you're 20 pounds overweight. You got to lose 20 pounds. I'm going, no way. But 2 weeks, 20 pounds, you know. Put on a pair of sweats. You run the stadium seats and walk down the stairs. And at any rate, I didn't do well in college. My first year, my only year. That was my only year. The outdoor season finished up around late April, and we hit the bars, you know, and it's amazing. It just amazes me when I think back on it how hard I worked at this drinking thing, because I would drink, and I hated the taste of beer. I would drink, and inevitably, I always drank too much. You know, I'd get sick. Next night, we're going to do this different. Always ended up the same. I was always getting sick, you know. After that first year, I moved back home. Was living with my parents, and had been there about 2 weeks, and was One night my father found out, well, not only do I drink, I smoke cigarettes too. I don't know how I picked up that nasty habit, but I still have it till today, you know, the smoking. But he caught me in the kitchen. I was laying on my back on the floor talking on the telephone about 2 o'clock. I had a beer in one hand and a cigarette in the other. And, you know, of course, he came, what, the, you know, and me being the wise the wise ass that I am, shot him a wisecrack, and I, you know, I ended up picking myself up off the floor, you know, and I think that's probably the only time that he ever really got physical with me. When I was younger, if you got in trouble, you knew. I mean, I did get whipped, you know, but it was one of these. All right, you messed up, right? Yeah. You know what you did wrong. Yeah. Okay, go in your room. Wait for me. I'll be back there in a minute. Ooh. You know, I might be back there 5 minutes. I might be back there a half hour. And by the time he walks in, you go, oh my God. You're already pleading for your life. He retired a chief. He was short, stocky. He always had a cigar in his mouth. He was a man. He was a man of his word. If he said it, I guarantee you, he would follow through on it. When he caught me then, it was, look, here's the rules. If you don't like them, adios, move, you know. So, hey, I don't like them. I'm moving. So, moved in with a couple of guys. And got a job. Started out, I was working as a draftsman for a company out of Longwood. And my drinking was progressing. They gave me a project to do once, and I set it on the shelf above my drafting table. And things are going on, you know. And called in sick one day, and next thing I know, somebody's knocking at the door, and I walk up. Open the door, it's my boss. I'm going, whoa. I don't know how he found out where we lived, because I had my parents' address on, unless they punked me out, which could have very well been. You know, he's going, hey, yeah, I know you called in sick and everything, but that project was due today. Where is it? Man, I set it up on that shelf, and it didn't move from the day he first gave it to me. I don't know why I didn't get fired. I have no idea, but they did keep me around. They finally lost the contract they had, and so that job more or less ended. You know, and between jobs, I was drinking. I got caught one night trying to steal a bottle of Boone's Farm wine, one bottle of Boone's Farm wine and a bottle of MD 2020. And I'm going, you know, I'm not going to steal anymore. So I'm going to have to make sure that I keep me a job so I can drink, you know, because the funny thing is, the humiliation of getting caught stealing, when I look back on it, that if I'd have taken notice to some of the humiliation I created when I was drinking, I wouldn't be up here tonight, you know. But at any rate, I from there I started working for a division of AT&T, a good job. Western Electric was the name of the company. That was before the federal government busted him up for being a monopoly. But worked for them. It was great pay, lousy benefit, or good benefits, but the conditions were just, you're in a telephone office, no windows, and you'd be there 8 hours. You had no idea what the weather was when you got out. But at any rate, they would transfer you around the nation or state. I got transferred over to Tampa. And that's when you really made your big bucks. You'd get per diem. But I was over in Tampa working. From Tampa, they transferred me to North Miami Beach. Well, I was going on vacation before I went down to North Miami Beach. So the next day, I was supposed to catch an airplane and fly up to South Carolina. We're over in Tampa drinking and got ready to leave. Had my stuff packed. Sorry. I would say doo-doo, but that ain't right. I packed up and I started heading back to Sanford. I was going to catch a plane the next day. And I wasn't drunk, but I had been drinking. I started falling asleep on my way back to Orlando. And I'd nod out and drift off the interstate. I was coming up I-4. And the loose gravel hitting the side of the road had waked me up. And I'd jerk it back up on. Back then, there wasn't a law. Seatbelts were not mandatory. So I didn't have my belt on. Nodded out again, and the second time when I jerked it back up on the road, I said, you know, I think I better buckle my seatbelt. You know, so I buckled it. Damn, next shot I drifted off, I jerked it back up, went sideways, went down into the median, and, you know, I'm heading this way, my headlights are pointing this way, so I can't see what's coming. And for some reason, I'm going to lay down in the seat. I had bucket seats. And so I laid down, and the next thing I knew, I was waking up, and my head was down on the floor, and I look up, and there's an oak tree. If anyone would have been riding with me, they would have been dead. There was an oak tree sitting where the passenger would have been. I ended up with a bruised hip. You know, oh, and I had loaned my brother my vehicle a couple of weeks before that. And I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, but at the time, I did smoke a joint or two, and I had a bag of pot in the car when I loaned it to him, and when he gave it back to me, it's going, "Where's my bag of pot?" You know, and he's going, "Well, I stuffed it up under the dashboard, and I got out there one day tearing this thing apart. I can't find this stuff anywhere." Well, when I wrapped it around the tree and when I woke up, that bag was sitting about this far away from my nose on the floor, and I'm going, "Ooh, oh." So I snatched it up. Thank God. I don't know how long I sat in the middle of the median, because it was a little bit of a distance off of the pavement until it took a while before somebody noticed that I was down there. But I got out, threw the dang pot out, and I start walking back, and I look, and I'm going, "Man, I threw it right in the..." You could see the path I took in the vehicle, and I threw it somewhere. I'm looking for it, and I can't find it. I couldn't find it. FHP shows up. "Well, let's see. Walk with me, and let's go see where you came off the road and everything." And we're walking. I'm going, "Oh, please, please, God, please, God." But he didn't find it. Didn't slow my drinking down. you know, my drinking continued to get worse. Eventually, the federal government busted up that job. They declared AT&T a monopoly. So I went to work. Doesn't matter. At any rate, oh, yes, it does matter. While I was working for Western Electric, it was New Year's. I was looking for a date and happened to find out that this girl I went to high school with, that she graduated a year before me, was in town, and I needed a date. So I called her up and got a date with her and ended up being my wife. Ended up, my brother used to date her in high school, you know, another one of, but a year after, a little over a year after we met, we got married, and for the first 7 years, it was nothing but party, you know. We didn't have any kids, and if we felt like doing something, we'd get up and do it and go anywhere, and but I had a bad habit of every day, damn near every day, I'd stop at the bar on the way home. And so we always had a problem. She always had a problem with my drinking. I didn't have a problem with it. I didn't have any problems, you know. But I know the night before we got married, me and the best man and her father went out, and he is an alcoholic. Her father, and he went out with us. Well, we didn't leave him until 2 o'clock when the bar closed. Now, he was not supposed to be drinking at the time, but. He came home later, as late as we did, I know that. The next day when I got married, I kept noticing, man, Barbara's parents don't seem to be very happy about this occasion, you know. And we were about to get married, and they were about to get a divorce, you know. But after... coming up on seven, Barbara and I talked about having kids, and we, man, you know, well, say yes or no. Well, I don't, you know, and I kept dragging my feet. Well, finally, it was too late. You know, we have 2 children. We've got a beautiful daughter and a son. Thank God. I know my son doesn't have the habits I had, which is a great relief. My daughter, she played with it, and it didn't agree with her. I'm hoping. All you can do is hope and pray, you know. But the insanity for me continued. We've been married 36 years, and it's, I need to give her a medal, you know, for putting up with my garbage, because I did. I was never a physically abusive person, but I could be verbally disgusting, and at times I was, you know. I had a job that I had for 23 years that I loved it, you know. I repaired equipment, and it was a mobile service. I covered 5 counties, and occasionally I'd go up to Georgia when they needed help. I was good at what I did. I enjoyed it. And I always used to think, man, if you lose this job, you're screwed. And back in April of 2002, I got pulled over for erratic driving. I got a DUI. They charged me with the DUI. I immediately lost that job. And things didn't look good, but it did not slow my drinking down. Eventually, we were both struggling with it. She went into Alcoholics Anonymous, I believe it was in 2004, and might have been 2002, I'm not sure. But I remember sitting around on a Sunday, and I'm drinking beer, and she's getting ready to go somewhere, and I'm going, where are you going? Going to an AA meeting. I'm going, how long you got to go to those? She said, probably the rest of my life. You know, and I didn't say it, but I'm thinking, oh, boy, she is sick. But couldn't have been more than about 6 months later, she came home one day, and she said, look, you got a choice. You're either going to have to quit drinking or leave. I said, yeah. Let me think about this a second. And it took me about a second. I got up, grabbed my bag, threw some shit in it, got in my car, off I went. Drove off to New Smyrna. My brother lived over there, and I sat over there, started working over there, and just that's all I did was work and drink. Eventually, back in early 2006, my work dried up in New Smyrna, and I was coming back to Orlando to work with this guy. So I came in the house. You know, and by this time, I'm tired. You know, I've been drinking all these years. And it was getting to the point where it was no fun. You know, it was work, hard work. And sitting in the backyard one day, just drinking a 12-pack, you know, and I said, you know, got this crazy idea. You know, I'm just going to stop for a month to prove I don't have a problem. And when I get cleaned up, I'm going to go out there and continue what I was doing. So I went in and told her, I said, well, you know, I think I'm going to quit drinking. She said, well, that's good. She said, I hope you're doing it for you because I'm packing my shit and leaving. And she did. And then I'm going, oh, my God. After about the third day of not drinking, I was getting out of control. I mean, my body was shaking. It was doing things I never thought it could do. I had a friend. I was court ordered in AA when I got my DUI, and I wasn't ready. You know, I went to two meetings. After that, I forged the rest of the sheet. You know, forged it and just. I don't know. Yeah, I could buy the God thing, but after a meeting one day, this guy, you know, he was talking to me. Well, it was the second meeting I went to. And what are you doing this weekend? I said, well, I'm going fishing, you know. He's, well, you look a little worried. I said, yeah, well, you know, my brother drinks. And he said, no big thing. Go fishing and don't drink, you know. And I'm going, this guy's crazy. You know, after that, you know, no, I don't need this AA thing, you know, but after the third day of shaking, I was looking for some relief, and this pride thing damn near killed me. I know I wish I'd have read a little bit of the big book before I came in, I don't know. Maybe it's good that I didn't, you know. But the other day, I just happened to be reading through the doctor's opinion, and it said we favor hospitalization for those alcoholics that are very jittery or befogged. Well, by the third day, I was all of the above. I don't know what befogged is. I know what I was. And after the second time I came in here, I knew this month, the month idea had to go, because the fear of God put the fear in me. I've never gone through a detox or anything. I didn't go to a detox. I figured, well, you know, by God, if I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous, there ain't no way I'm going to go to a detox center or a rehab. Hell no. My famous saying used to be, I know I drink too much. When I'm ready, I'm going to quit, you know. I figured out real quick, not only could I not quit, but I thought I was losing my damn sanity. I honestly, that scared me. I was. It made me open my eyes. So I had to do the deal, you know. I had to get a sponsor, you know, and this is a strange program, you know. I'm a redneck. I'm a cracker. And I'm looking for a sponsor. And I'm going, let me get this Puerto Rican Brooklyn junkie, wino junkie from the streets of Brooklyn to see if he can help me out. You know, and it's amazing. It is truly amazing. He's like a brother. But when I first came in here, the first 2 weeks, this door worked. First 2 weeks, I was as close to that door as I could get. I didn't sit out at the picnic table because there were two intimidating-looking people that sat out there. One was real tall and skinny, and one was real short, and he looked like grumpy. You know, it reminded me of Mutt and Jeff, you know. So I'd sit over at on that curb. They used to have a big yellow sign, no loitering, smoking, loud talking, all that. I sat and leaned up against it. It took me about 2 weeks to work myself up to sitting at the same table with these guys out there. And one of them was Mike Murray. Ended up being we got real close. He knew the book, and he probably, other than my sponsor, Mike Murray knew me better around here than anyone else. He was truly a delight to be around. He ended up passing away a little over a year ago, year and a half ago. But it's one of the few times I didn't really cut and run, haul at, you know, when somebody was getting in that condition, I was usually out of there. I didn't want to deal with it. But this program has made me, has taught me how to live, how to grow up. I went through the steps. First step was a no-brainer. You know, I knew I was alcoholic. I was hopeless. I didn't think Alcoholics Anonymous was going to work. I really didn't when I first came in here. The second step, you know, it gave me some it gave me some hope that there's a solution. You know, do you want to do it? You know, are you willing? And I was. The third step, and I was still in a befogged. I was still befogged. And when I got to the third step, I was still befogged. How am I going to turn my life over to a power greater than myself? And my sponsor just said, look, man, just be willing. Let's go to step four. You'll have fun. And so I continued on, and slowly as I progressed through the steps, my relationship with God is getting better every day. You know, it's one of those things. It's, you know, you've got to have patience. You've got to have patience. But went and did my fourth and fifth step. Didn't really appreciate how sick I was until I did my fourth step. Was and definitely afraid of my fifth step. I just couldn't imagine writing it down. For me, writing it down was one thing, but actually having these words come out of my mouth and admit what I did to someone else it took a load off. Not only did it take a load off, but in the big book they say, when you're finished, go home, be by yourself for an hour, read the big book, you know, and just meditate on what you've done and what you're doing. And something happened then, something that I felt physically. It was an experience I've never had before. I do know that it was the boogeyman. Not the feeling, but the fifth step was the one of the ones I feared, and ended up being one of the more rewarding ones. It seems like everything I've been asked to do in this program that is uncomfortable for me ends up being more beneficial for me. And I don't like feeling uncomfortable, you know, but the rewards are, they're there, you know. I know a lot of people struggle with this program, and I don't know. I just thank God I was so desperate. To change, you know, I was so tired of who I was and what I did. The sixth and the seventh step are an ongoing thing for me. Last week I just did another fourth and fifth step. I'm proud to say my list wasn't as long, but I still have got some of that. I haven't turned it all. You know, God hadn't removed it all yet. You know, and He won't. I've got a mouth that gets me in trouble, got me in trouble, and still gets me in trouble. You know, if my wife's sense of humor would just be like mine is, it would be so much better. But we do, we have our disagreements. We can sit down and talk like two adults. And The eighth and ninth step, the ninth step, which was another one of my big fears, ended up being another rewarding experience most of the time. I know I had planned on doing my ninth step with my wife, and we had made a, at the time we were still separated, and made an appointment or made a date with her where I was going to take her out. I need to hurry up. Take her out on Saturday night to dinner, and I was going over to see her this Wednesday, this particular Wednesday. I'm going, man, I've got a great idea. I'm going to damn do my ninth step and get that out of the way today and get it over with. So went up there, told her what my intentions were, and she said, I'm not ready. You know, I went, what? You're not ready? Damn, I got pissed off. I got it, walked outside, called up my sponsor. I said, man, you know what happened? You know, and she's not ready. He's going, so what's the big deal? Well, what do you mean, what just, you know, thanks for your sympathy. And I ended up doing it that Saturday, and, you know, it, like everything else, it wasn't quite as bad as I thought it would be. I'm talking too much. I need to get to sit down. But this program saved my life. You just, if you're struggling with it, you know, I guess you're not desperate enough. I don't know. I know I was so desperate that it didn't matter what I had to do. I wanted relief. I got it. I've got it now. All through God's grace. I thought he had abandoned me a long time ago. And I found out that I abandoned him. But I'm grateful to be here tonight, and thank you very much. Yeah.